Word of mouth.
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 Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, in for Virginia Prescott. In early 1997, the United Network of Organ Sharing, or UNOS, publicly addressed a viral email chain that was warning travelers about the dangers of organ theft. The email claimed people were being kidnapped and drugged, only to wake up in a bathtub filled with ice and either one or both of their kidneys removed. UNOS dismissed the emails as a hoax and cited the work of a Washington Post reporter who, in 1991, traced the origin of the myth to a rejected movie script. Since the mid-1980s, UNOS has been tracking reports of organ theft and claims to have found no evidence to support such rumors. And yet, organ theft horror stories persist in the United States and abroad. Anthropologist Nancy Shepper Hughes spent her career investigating the worldwide rumors about a global market for human organs and tissues and found that the stories were, quote, true at that indeterminate level between fact and metaphor. Ethan Waters is a journalist who has contributed to the New York Times Magazine, Mother Jones, and Esquire, among others. He profiled Nancy Shepper Hughes for Pacific Standard's medical issue in an article titled The Organ Detective. Ethan, thanks so much for speaking with me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
So let's start with, how exactly did Shepper Hughes first begin her investigation on organ theft?
Well, the rumors came to her when she was down in Brazil working on her now very well-known book called Death Without Weeping. And she was down there documenting poverty in Brazil and the high death rates among children and the ways in which the medical establishment wasn't helping very much down there. And among her sources, she began to hear these stories of vans along dirt roads picking up children and then the children's bodies later turning up in dumpsters and on the roadsides, you know, eviscerated from their organs. And the local population was just certain that these children were being kidnapped and murdered for their organs. So Nancy, being that she was charting the death records and going to the, you know, the cemeteries and the mortuaries every day, had a good reason to be skeptical about these stories. She was seeing no eviscerated bodies show up. When she wrote about it later in Death Without Weeping, she ended up coming to the conclusion that these stories were not, in fact, literally true, but they were true at the intermediate level, as you say, between fact and metaphor, by which she said that they spoke to the other difficulties that this population went through and their really troubled relationship with the medical establishment. She wasn't going to dismiss them, but there was no actual evidence of children being murdered for their organs.
So the idea is that healthcare is a service that works primarily for the elite, people with money, and because of that, these stories were sort of generated out of fear?
Out of fear and out of the fact that was exactly true, that this population knew that the healthcare benefited the rich and by and large left them to die in many cases when they could have been helped.
Organ donation was really just an experimental procedure still in the 70s. So at what point did the market for an organ trade become a real worldwide market in the first place?
So in the early and mid-90s, the technology really began to spread around the world. It spread across Asia and then throughout the United States. And then there was a drug called cyclosporine that came online that helped with the rejection of organs, which basically increased the ability of people to get organs from many more people than they would have otherwise. And that at that point, it really began to spread around the world. And the technology spread much faster than the laws and understandings and ways of thinking about it. So there was a great deal of controversy over the 90s as to where these organs were coming from, what constituted brain death, whether you could take organs from dead bodies. And there was a lot of controversy, so the medical establishment on sort of a global scale had to really run to catch up with the spread of this brand new technology.
So in your article, you sort of profile Shepper Hughes crisscrossing the globe looking for evidence of an organ black market, which, of course, is a black market. In 1984, the National Organ Transplant Act outlawed the sale of human organs, at least in the U.S., but Shepper Hughes did manage to find some evidence of people buying and selling kidneys here in the United States. How was she able to find that link?
Well, the turn really came in the mid-90s when she went to a conference with a lot of other transplant surgeons, and she was asked to addressed these rumors, and in the process of talking about these rumors, she began to realize that there was indeed a great deal of controversy about how organs were being procured. There was a black market where people were being paid for things like kidneys. There was tremendous abuses within mortuaries where people would take not the live organs, like hearts and kidneys, but skin and tissue and cornea from dead bodies all over the world. And she began to realize that this was really a rich area for an anthropologist to begin to try to understand what was going on a global scale. And indeed, as you say, she began to travel the world aggressively, going to Moldova and the Philippines and South Africa and Brazil, trying to chart mainly the kidney trade, which is, of course, the trade where you can sell one of your kidneys and have another one that still works. And there was a tremendous sort of multicultural, multi-border black market. And Nancy worked exceedingly hard for many, many years to try to sort of put her finger on what was going on and how those interconnections were happening, who the brokers were, who the surgeons were. And eventually, she did managed to trace it to American shores, and she got basically an email at one point from someone inside an organization called United Lifeline, and he basically disclosed to her that this was a organization that brought pairs of people to the United States to major hospitals, and it would be a donor and a recipient. They'd come to a hospital and say, "We have this donor that wants to altruistically give to this recipient. We'll pay basically cash for this procedure. There'll be no insurance. It'll all be profits for the hospital." And indeed, what was happening was that that donor was often getting paid, was always getting paid, which is illegal by U.S. and most international laws.
I'm speaking with the journalist Ethan Waters about the illegal organ trade, which has long been the focus of anthropologist Nancy Shepherd Hughes. Now, we think of anthropologists being, conventionally speaking anyway, objective as, I guess, putting science first. But Nancy was actually instrumental in getting the head of United Lifeline, a man named Isaac Rosenbaum, indicted for his role in brokering illegal organs.
Yes. So Nancy, by her own admission, bends a lot of the conventional rules of anthropology. And to her great credit, she addresses these the ways in which she is, you know, outside the norm. One of the ways she's outside the norm certainly is the idea that you would take your source material and turn around and take it straight to law enforcement. And a lot of other people in anthropology would say, "I would never do that." Nancy was looking at it and saying, "I see an international crime going on here. I see donors being exploited. I see them getting no aftercare. This is something that I have to intervene with, and I am not going to let ideas of professional ethics get in the way of me stopping something that is really, truly a tragedy." This is not the only way she's pushed the boundaries of anthropology and social science. She has done things like basically gone undercover. She's gone to places and claimed to be a person that was looking for a kidney, that wanted to buy a kidney. She's negotiated the price with, you know, potential donors. She's walked into hospitals, you know, saying, like, "I'm Dr. Shepherd Hughes and I need this information," assuming that people weren't going to understand that doctor there was her PhD in anthropology.
This is not this does not sound like the life of an academic. This sounds like the life of a police officer.
She really is her own, you know, there's no one in the anthropology world that I can really compare her to. She has this idea of what she calls being a militant anthropologist, and that idea goes all the way back to long before she started in the organ world, actually, when she tried to rally everyone in the profession to, as she puts it, to sort of become class traitors, to push against bourgeois institutions like universities and hospitals, and to express solidarity with the sources and basically join them in their fights against oppression. And she's had a great deal of influence over the practice of anthropology. There are a lot of people in the profession that think very highly of her, and indeed there's a lot of people in the profession that think that she's dragging the profession into sort of a moral model of anthropology, and you're not really actually, you know, studying the world in the appropriate shades of gray.
You've been following Shepherd Hughes for a few years now, and you actually joined her at the sentencing hearing for Rosenbaum 2 summers ago. What were those testimonies like, and what was her response?
So Rosenbaum got sentenced a couple years ago in a court in New Jersey, and I accompanied Nancy into the hearing, and there was testimony by a doctor from Albert Einstein Hospital. There was testimony by a donor who had been paid for his kidney. There was testimony by a family member of the person that received the organ. And it was very interesting because Nancy, as we sat there, you know, had sort of a disparaging comment for every character in the courtroom. She really felt like that the doctor was not being fully disclosing what he knew. She felt the prosecution wasn't asking the right questions. She felt the family member, you know, could have donated her own organ instead of buying one. It was kind of remarkable, and it reminded me of something that Nancy wrote very early on in her career about what a medical anthropologist should do. She said, a medical anthropologist should become a court jester. It should become the mocking and dissenting voice from the sidelines. And I realized sort of as I was sitting there that she'd almost become exactly that for me, this sort of mocking court jester, making disparaging comments about everyone in the courtroom. It was a really interesting moment.
Throughout the article, you get the sense that Nancy finds empathy with virtually everybody in the black market organ process. We're talking about the donor, the recipient, even the brokers, the people who arrange transplants, but not so much the doctors. And it seems so strange that given that she operates in these shades of gray, you know, that she's, you know, at some times an anthropologist, at some times an interrogator, at some times an undercover cop, that she wouldn't be able to find the shades of gray and the nuance for the doctors and surgeons who are actually conducting transplants.
Right. I noticed that in her work as well. So when she talks about the brokers and when she talks about the donors, and she has this remarkable ability to see detail, to pick up nuances. It's when she steps back and she talks about the transplant community and she says things like, the transplant community is like child abusing priests, that they protect their own in this way. And she said things like, doctors are creating a need for organs that don't exist. And transplant technology is the modern form of human sacrifice. Like, it's these moments when she steps back and looks at the transplant community that her rhetoric becomes really white hot and almost, almost sounds like the trailer for a horror movie at times. It's so outlandish. And it does stand in contrast, in my mind, to that more subtle work that she does for the donor, for the broker, her really good work of exposing this world that people really didn't understand or know existed. I'm much more impressed by the on-the-ground anthropology she does than that global view of the transplant world.
Well, Ethan, thank you so much for talking about this with us today.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Ethan Waters is a journalist who has contributed to the New York Times Magazine, Mother Jones, and Esquire, among others. He wrote about anthropologist Nancy Shepper Hughes for Pacific Standard's Medical Issue. And you can find a link to that article, The Organ Detective, at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.